the last verse in chapter 7, and then we are going to proceed on with chapter 8. And what we have seen so far in the closing verses of chapter 7, from verse number 20 onwards up to the last verse 29, Krishna has divided all devotees into two groups. One group is called the Sakama Bhaktas, those who worship God for their personal desires, for their worldly desires. And another group of devotees are called the Nishkama Bhaktas, those who only want to attain God, who do not worship God for selfish desires, but their main goal is to attain moksha. And why is this so? Because he has said very clearly in, we go back to verse number 19. Verse number 19, page 143. He says to come to this highest form of worship, where we are able to understand God in totality. And that if you look at the third line of verse number 19, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. This person has to come to that realization that sarva means everything in this creation, including myself, everything in creation, sarvam iti is nothing but Vasudeva. Vasudeva here represents not Krishna, but Vasudeva here represents the supreme goal, the infinite goal, that is Brahman. So in order to realize this, Krishna has told us we have to start on the path of worship. But it is going to take us several lifetimes. That's why he said in verse number 19, Bahunam Janmanam Ante. Bahunam, many, what? Janmanam, many births. Ante, at the end of many births. So several births we have to go through in this process of worship, so that the mind reaches that state of purification and is able to grasp the knowledge that what? Vasudeva Sarvam Iti. Everything in this world is nothing but God. And why we say that? Because in chapter 7, Krishna said that God has got two entities. One is the higher para prakriti, which is consciousness, and the other is apara prakriti, which is matter. This consciousness and matter, the lower and higher nature of God, combined together become the whole creation. Thus, what does it tell us? The whole creation, including ourselves, is nothing but a manifestation of the higher and lower nature of God. The lower nature in us is the matter, the higher nature is the consciousness. But to understand this, it may take several births. And we have to start with devotion. But devotion also falls into two categories, and that's why he separated all the devotees into Sakama Bhaktas and Nishkama Bhaktas. So what did he tell us from this verses 20 onwards? That Sakama Bhakta, or one who worships God for personal desires, to satisfy selfish and personal desires, such a kind of devotion is not wrong. It is not wrong to worship God for seeking selfish or personal desires, because there are many things we want in life, there are obstacles we face in life. Obviously, we go to God to remove these obstacles or help us attain what we want. So, Sakama Bhakti is not wrong. It is a valid form of bhakti. It is also a very enjoyable form of bhakti. Why? Why is it an enjoyable form of bhakti? You get the result. You get what you want. So it's a pleasing form of bhakti. But he cautions us that in Sakama Bhakti there is a disadvantage. And what is the disadvantage? That all whatever we achieve is only finite. You can never attain infinite. Whatever you attain is all finite. So we have to understand this, that eventually we have to come out of this type of bhakti. So there are advantages and disadvantages, that we are constantly caught in this worshipping only for finite results. But Krishna says the other type of bhakta, the nishkama bhakta, who he talks about in verse number 28, and how has this person become a nishkama bhakta? He also has gone, he or she has also gone through several births, and he has also has come then to the final understanding, Vasudeva Sarvam Iti. Now, generally, there are four ways we can get knowledge. That's what the scriptures tell us. There are four ways in which we are able to attain knowledge. And what are the four ways? One is called Pratyaksha. P-R-A-T-Y-A-K-S-H-A. Pratyaksha has the word Aksha. Aksha means eyes. So Pratyaksha means what we see before our eyes indicates any knowledge we gain through our personal experience. We directly have a direct experience. So through that direct experience we go through, we gain knowledge. So that is one method called Pratyaksha. There is a second method called Upamana. Upamana, U-P-A-M-A-N-A, Upamana. Upamana means we observe the experience of others. We see the ups and downs of life they go through, and then we observe their experience, and from that we learn. So those who are chasing after all kinds of material goals, we see the ups and downs they go through. We observe their lives, and from there we should learn some lesson, isn't it? So that is called Upamana. Third is called Anumana. A-N-U-M-A-N-A. Anumana. Anumana means inference, where we hear about it from others. We don't directly see that person going through ups and downs, but we hear of stories, you know, so-and-so did like this, so-and-so has an ego, after that he had a downfall, and so forth, and so forth, and so forth. So we hear about it, about the experience of others. And the final, fourth way is called Agama. A-G-A-M-A, Agama. Agama means that which we have read in the scriptures. The scriptures tell us that what are the wrong qualities that we should not cultivate. They tell us to avoid anger, passion, desire, ego, etc. So the scriptures tell us that these are all barriers to our spiritual growth. So we learn from the scriptures. So there are many ways that we can get experience, from the experience of others, from our own experiences that we have gone through life. We have seen what happens when we go on chasing finite goals. So the Upanishad, there's an Upanishad that says, what has this person learned after going through all these various experiences, self-experiences, experiences of others? He says, yat kritam tat anityam. Yat kritam, anything that is produced through any action, kritam means action, K-R-T-A-M, kritam, anything that is produced by your action is tat anityam. Anitya means what? Which is limited. Action is limited. You do an action for a specific time, the result also is limited. Isn't it? So, yat kritam tan tat anityam. Every karma is bound by time. Over a period of time, whatever we attain will perish. And this refers to both what we call, there are two types of karmas generally. One is called Vaidika karmas, V-A-I-D-I-K-A, Vaidika karmas. Vaidika karmas means those karmas which are prescribed in our scriptures they tell us you do this type of prayers, you chant this type of mantras, you offer this kind of offerings to the Lord, this is what you get back. So these are called Vaidika karmas, which are prescribed by the Vedas. Even these results of the Vaidika karmas are also limited or unlimited? They are also limited. Even the possibility of attaining heaven is also for a limited period of time. And the other type of karmas are called Laukika karmas. L-A-U-K-I-K-A. Laukika karmas means whatever worldly actions that we perform for worldly pressures. Very simple but crude example. If we want to get high, what do we do? You drink some alcohol. You drink one glass, two glass, three glasses. And you attain a high. Then what happens? Comes down again. Right? That high will come down again. And what do? You drink again. And you become high again. And then it comes down again. So, what is the result? It is finite. And whatever we pursue, we want to buy a new handphone, we want to buy whatever it is, every pleasure is limited, it is finite. So, therefore, whether it is Vaidika karmas or Laukika karmas, we have to understand that whatever we are going after is finite. So, Krishna says here, such a person, now he's talking about a Nishkama Bhakta, who has gone through several births, and what is his result? In verse 28, if we look at verse number 28, second line, Jananam Punya Karmana. Jananam means this person has now gone through several births and purified himself with what? Nishkama Karmas. By pursuing the infinite goal, He has worshipped God only to pursue the infinite goal. The result is he has purified himself. How? Punya karmana. The karmas, the actions he does have given him or her a lot of punyam. And this punyam at one particular time in your birth will drive you towards what? Spiritual knowledge. So as a result of all these good actions that you have done, not selfish actions, but all the worship that you have done to attain the highest goal, that is moksha, eventually all that will add up to the punyam and will drive you in one birth to seek this knowledge. And thus what happens for these people who are jananam punya karmanam? He says in the third line, verse 28, te dvandva moha nirmuktaha. Te dvandva moha nirmuktaha. Nirmukta, they become free. Because of this purity of mind they have attained, they nirmuktaha, they become free of what? Moha, delusion. Of what? What are they free of? Which delusion? Dvandva, pair of opposites. What are pair of opposites? Likes and dislikes. There are no more troubled by their likes and dislikes. Their life is not guided by likes and dislikes. If life is not guided by likes and dislikes, what is it that guides your life? If likes and dislikes don't guide your life, what guides your life? Right and wrong, isn't it? Because most of the time we do what we like and we avoid what we dislike. But what should we be doing? Do what is right and avoid what is wrong. So our life should be guided by what is right and wrong rather than by likes and dislikes. So such a person now is free of the dvandva, the pair of opposites, does not lead his or her life through likes and dislikes, but follows what is right and avoids what is wrong. And thus, what do they do? This person understands that the problem is not with the world. Where is the problem? Therefore, where lies the solution? Myself. I should not be correcting the world. I should be correcting myself. So, what does this person do? Mam bhajante. Mam bhajante in the last line. Mam bhajante means they worship me. Now, when Krishna is saying they worship me, what does he mean? What me is this? Not the finite, but the infinite, the supreme, the what we call absolute Brahman. So they start to worship me, or they seek the highest goal. That is what? Para Prakriti. They are not seeking Apara Prakriti. They are seeking now Para Prakriti. And thus, this seeking of Para Prakriti is not a part-time hobby. It is not a weak desire to seek the highest. That's why he adds another word there, Dridhav Vritaha. The fourth line, Dridhav Vritaha, means they are firm in their conviction. They are not shaken. They are very firm on this path to seek the finite. They never give up this goal. So, they have unswerving in their unswerving in their resolve, in their faith. And with commitment, with dedication, they do all the various sadhana to attain this highest goal. That is, the seeking the infinite goal. So that is what we covered up to verse number 28. Now in the final verse here, the last two verses, 29 and 30, we start with verse number 29. So, Nishkama Bhakti begins when I realize the very important fact that the world is not the cause of my sorrow or the cause of my happiness. You see, there is an Upanishad that says all of us love one most important thing. We find the most precious, we love the most precious in our life, all of us. What is that? What is it that each of us love the, or hold the most precious in our life? Ourselves. So if somebody tells you, I love my husband, I love my wife, I love my children. Why? Because of ourselves. As long as they cater to our views and fancies, we love them. But the minute they don't cater to our views and fancies, the love becomes a little bit less. Isn't it? So therefore, until we understand that the problem is not out there, the problem is myself, then only we start to get the solution how to purify ourselves. So, to seek our real nature, this Sachit Ananda, is when, due to our own misunderstanding, we look upon the world to seek my happiness and security. That is our misunderstanding. It is only when we realize that the security and peace is within, then we turn our direction of seeking to within. So therefore, Krishna says, when we know our real self, when we understand that what we are seeking is that infinite which is within, what happens when we attain this infinite? He says, in this verse number 29, first line, Jara Maranam Mokshaya. The first most important benefit of seeking the infinite is Mokshaya. We get freedom from what? Jara, which is old age. Maranam, death. We attain freedom from old age and death. It is not that we don't grow old or that we don't die. So what does it mean by you will get freedom from old age and death? When you attain this infinite knowledge, when you identify with your infinite self, immediately the first benefit is freedom from old age and death. But we all know we are going to age. We all know that we are going to die. So what kind of freedom is this? The fear of old age and death can only be removed how? When you realize that I am not this body, I am not this temporary body, I am the eternal Atma. It is only that ego that makes us identify with this body, that makes us identify with our possessions, our relations and the world. The minute we identify with our higher self and we accept that I am this eternal soul that is never subject to birth and death, then the identification with the body is gone. There is no more fear of birth and death. What is it that dies? Body. What is it that never dies?
Atman,
the soul. Atman carries on repeatedly. It is eternal. So there is no more fear of old age. There is no more fear of disease. There is no more fear of death also. And we have seen also that many examples given to us in the Puranas, isn't it? Many asuras try to avoid death, try to avoid being killed. But what is the ultimate result? They were killed anyway. So that means what it tells us, you cannot avoid old age and death. As long as you identify with this physical body, you will carry on having fear of all old age and death. So therefore, he says, they attain this moksha. This is the benefit of attaining that knowledge and identifying with your higher self. And thus, he says, what do they do? Ye yatanti. They are those who strive. They strive. Yatanti means they strive. What do they do to strive? Mam asritya. They take shelter in me. Asritya means they resort to me or they take shelter in me. So these strivers who go beyond old age and death belong to apara prakriti. You are now identifying with para prakriti. Therefore, you have gone beyond old age and death when you identify with para prakriti. So they have attained the para prakriti, so they worship me as the highest goal. That means the infinite. And thus, he says, te vidu. They know. What do they know? They are the knowers. Means what knowledge have they attained? They have attained the knowledge that only para prakriti can give them eternal peace, security and happiness. So, he says, they discover my higher nature. Earlier they were worshipping me as they, what we call, worshipping the personal God as a form. But now they have come to understand what? Vasudeva Sarvamiti. That this consciousness is all pervading, is everywhere. So they know me as the formless para prakriti. So now Krishna is going to use a series of technical words. And these technical words are going to be connected to the next chapter, because Arjuna is going to ask explanation about what are all these words that Krishna is using. So let us look now at what are the technical words here. He says, these people then come to know or understand what? That this Brahma, te tat Brahma, Krishnam, the word Krishnam here does not mean Krishna, it means unlimited. If you see the word Krishnam, in the third line of verse 29, te Brahma tat vidu Krishnam. They know that tat means that Brahman. Here Brahman, we are talking about the absolute, unmanifest reality. They know, viduhu means they know, that this is the, Krishna means it's unlimited. Brahman is unlimited. It is all pervading. They will come to know my higher nature, that this Brahman is all pervading. And thus he says, akhila, without exception they will know this. And now he uses the technical words. How do they know me? The first technical word he uses is Adi Atma. So we'll understand this when we come to chapter 8. Now Krishna is saying, these people who know my higher nature will come to understand me as Adi Atma. Adi Atma means the self which is manifesting in this body, is called Adi Atma. And then in verse number 30, he uses some more technical terms. Back to verse number 29. Not only Adi Atman, but Karma. Karma, what is action? They come to know what is the real definition of karma. What is action? We will look at that again in verse number, in the next chapter. And then in verse number 30, some more technical terms are used. Sadi Bhutam, Adi Daivam, and Adi Yajnam. So they come to know God as Sadi Bhutam, they come to know God as Adi Daivam, they also come to know God as Adi Yajnam. So there are total six what we call identifications of this God: Brahma, Karma, Adi Atma, and plus Sadi Bhutam, Adi Devam, and Adi Yajna. There are six terms there, technical terms mentioned in verses 29 and 30. And what are all these six terms actually? What do all these six terms represent? Although they are all technical terms, don't worry about it now. We will come to chapter 8, everything will be clear. So what do this, important for us to know now, what do these six terms actually represent? What do they represent? When he talks about that this God is all this, is Adi Atma, Adi Bhuta, etc. What do these, all these six terms represent? Since we say God is nothing but combination of para and apara prakriti, these six terms refer to para and apara prakriti. That God is in para, he is also in apara, and these are the technical terms used to describe God when he is in para or apara. So some terms describe the apara prakriti, some terms describe the para prakriti. And in totality, if we know, that means we know God in full. We know the total, we have a total knowledge of God. So once we understand the six terms, we will know where God exists. He exists as Adi Bhuta, he exists as Adi Atma, he exists as Brahman, he exists with different names in different places of the creation. Okay? So now don't worry too much about this. When we come to chapter 8, all this will be clear. Now, another thing is very important point that Krishna raises here. And that's why chapter 8 is a bit of a unique chapter in Gita, because it is the only chapter that deals with death. All the other chapters don't talk about death, only chapter 8 talks about death. So it is actually one of the chapters we recite when we go to all these prayers dealing with departed souls. Chapter 8 is one of the relevant chapters. So what Krishna makes a very important point here. These jnanis who have understood me now in totality, at time of death, he says, they remember me. That means what? They remember me in totality. They remember me as the para and apara prakriti. When we know all these six terms, what they refer to, at time of death, we know God in totality. So therefore, two very important things now we have to note from this verse. One is, what is the significance of remembering God at point of death? Since Krishna has mentioned this, that those who know me at time of death, that means he's saying it is very important to know him at time of death. And we need to know what is the significance. If I remember or if I know God in totality at time of death, what is the significance? Second, which is an even more important question, how can I remember God at time of death? Is there a technique, is there a way that I can remember God at time of death? Is it that easy? So, you want to ask something? No. So, how can I remember God at time of death? So, here now he's talking about, if you look at the third line, Prayana Kale. Prayana Kale means at time of death, right? And generally at time of death, we will remember everything except God, isn't it? Because why? We have so much attachment to all the people and all our responsibilities that we are leaving behind. So here Krishna says, Prayana Kale, at time of death, those who have yuktaha, chetasa. Chetasa means those whose minds are yuktaha, they are concentrated, they are fixed on what? On me. Me meaning what? The God in totality. Knowing God in totality at time of death, when their chetasa, their mind is totally fixed on me, yuktaha, what happens? He says, therefore, a lot of discipline is required at time of death. And we always ask how to cultivate, how to get this discipline. Because so many things are happening at time of death. So those who remember me, mam viduhu means those who remember me in totality at time of death, is what he says here, that steadfast in mind they know me. So now we want to know, why is it important to remember him at time of death? And second, how do I remember God at time of death? So now, with this in mind, we will go on to chapter 8 now. Now, chapter 8 is entitled Akshara Brahma Yoga. Akshara means imperishable. Brahma means that absolute reality. So it is now directing us towards that imperishable absolute reality. Now, when Arjuna hears all these technical terms being spoken by Krishna, obviously he wants to know what is the meaning of all these technical terms, and at the same time he is going to ask, what is the significance of remembering you at time of death? What is going to happen if I remember you at time of death? So, what we call Ishvara Smaranam, to remember God at time of death. So, very important point is going to be introduced here also in chapter 8, which is meditating on the Saguna Ishvara. Now, there are basically, at the end of chapter 8, Krishna is going to explain that there are two ways we leave this world. One is known as the bright path. When we leave this world by the what is known as the bright path, we don't return. The other is known as the dark path. When we go, we return. But in the path of bright path also, there are two ways, which I will explain later, how when we leave this body, one is called direct liberation, one is called indirect liberation. So this chapter is going to deal with that. One is direct and one is indirect liberation. So we will come to discuss this, okay? So there are a lot of important topics which are spoken of in this chapter 8. And one of them, of course, is meditation on the Saguna Ishvara, that God with form. So now in the first verse, let us see the questions that Arjuna poses here. Okay, the word Kim is repeated many times, you can see in verse number 1. Kim basically means what or why, right? Kim. So what does Arjuna ask? He says, the first question, Tat Brahma Kim. What is this Brahma? What do you mean by saying Brahma? So a definition of Brahma is going to be given by Krishna. Tat Brahma Kim. What is Brahma? Second question of Arjuna, Adi Atman Kim. What is the meaning of Adi Atma? So definition of Adi Atma. Please tell me, what is Adi Atma? Then he says, the third, second line, Kim Karma. Now, karma we all know as action. But here when Arjuna is asking Kim Karma, what is action, means he wants to know the deeper meaning of what is really karma, what is the real definition of karma. Fourth question, Adi Bhutam Chakim Proktam. Proktam means what is said. When people talk about Adi Bhutam, what is the meaning of Adi Bhutam? And the word Adi Bhutam contains the word Bhuta. Bhuta means it is related to the five elements. So there is some connection with this word Adi Bhutam to the five elements, ether, air, fire, water, earth. Fifth question, Adi Devam Kim Uchate. What is that which is known as Adi Devam? Again, Adi Devam contains the word Daiva. Daiva means there is some relation to the devas or the gods. So what is this Adi Devam also? And thus he addresses Krishna as He Purushottama. Purushottama addressing Krishna as Purusha Uttama. There are two words combined here. The word Purusha Uttama means Purusha plus Uttama. Meaning what? Arjuna is saying, I am just an ordinary Purusha. You are a Purusha Uttama. You are a supreme Purusha. So therefore only you can remove this ignorance of mine. So he is addressing in a very humble way Krishna, that you are the Purusha Uttama, can you please clarify these terms to me? Okay, verse number 2 now. The sixth question of Arjuna. What is the sixth question? The next page, 150. Adi Yajna Potra Kaha. Kaha means who? Who is this Adi Yajna? Now when Arjuna asks who is this Adi Yajna, obviously he must have heard something about this. So he is asking in a very different way. Who is this Adi Yajna? And Yajna we have learnt in chapter 3 means what? Sacrifices. So who is this which is related to various kind of sacrifices that we do, meaning all the kinds of prayers, rituals, etc. that we do. And now he adds in one extra question also. Katham asmin dehe. How, katham means how, asmin exists, this Adi Yajna, how does this Adi Yajna exist where? In the dehe, in the body. So Arjuna obviously knows something about this Adi Yajna. He wants to know how does this Adi Yajna exist in our body. And finally the seventh question, which is a two-part question, which relates to death. He says, Prayana Kale, at time of death, Prayana Kale, what is the significance of remembering God at time of death? Is there some significance of remembering? Is there any value? Is there any advantage of remembering God at time of death? And the second part of the question he asks is, Katham Neya Asi Niya Tatmavi. Katham, how? Neya, are you to be known or remembered? By who? Niya Tatmavi, by people who have a dedicated, committed, disciplined mind. Because what did Krishna say earlier? Those who have a disciplined, concentrated mind and remember me at time of death. So he wants to know how to remember you at time of death by those people who have a dedicated, concentrated, disciplined mind. Because even when we are, you know, why is Arjuna asking this question? Right. So he wants to know. You see, he's asking him how can a person with a disciplined mind, meaning what, one who has tremendous control, how can the one with a tremendous control of mind remember your time of death? Meaning what? As it is, when we are alive, also it's so difficult to remember God, isn't it? So imagine that. And when we are alive, also so difficult to remember God. And when is the most difficult time to remember God? When you have stress, you remember God. When is the most difficult time to remember God? When you are in meditation. Isn't it? That's the time when the mind runs. It thinks of everything except God. So when we sit for meditation, we find that everything is running. The mind is running. The more you try to quieten the mind, the more it runs. And then at a time of death, when all our faculties are failing, how to bring this mind under concentration? Is it possible? This is what Arjuna wants to know. At the time when we are facing all the pains of the body and all that, and suffering, and how are we going to concentrate the mind on God? Is it possible? He Madhusudana, again addressing Krishna as Madhusudana, meaning killer of the demon Madhu. So just like you came and killed Madhu, why? Because people prayed to you, they were suffering due to this demon who was terrorizing them. In that same way, I'm praying to you, may you also remove my ignorance and my doubts also. So now all these questions Arjuna has asked, now it is time for Krishna to answer. So we'll take one at a time now. So verse number 3, Sri Bhagavan Vacha, now Krishna gives the answers to Arjuna's questions. So first of all, he defines what is Brahma. Brahma, he defines Paramam Aksharam Brahma. Very simple. Brahma is one simple definition to know him. Two words there. Aksharam. Aksharam means what? That is imperishable. And Paramam means what? Supreme. that supreme entity which is imperishable, that is the simple definition for Brahma. So Aksharam, and this is the very title of the chapter itself, Aksharam Brahma Yoga. So Parama means that which is supreme, Aksharam that is which is imperishable. And this imperishable Brahman therefore actually represents the consciousness. It is the eternal consciousness. It is the all-pervading consciousness. Because that is the only thing that doesn't decay, that is the only thing that doesn't perish. Whereas like our body perishes. So very important now, he's already given you an indication what is Brahma. Anything that doesn't perish. So whatever we see that is subject to perish, which is going to perish, is definitely not Brahma. So only thing we can come to for that conclusion is that Brahma is the consciousness which never perishes. And this word Brahma also in the Upanishads is defined as a root word which comes from the root word Bra, B-R-H. So the word Brahman actually comes from the root word B-R-H, Bra, which means what? The word Bra means big. Now, when we say Brahman is big, means what? What do you mean? You say Brahman is big. Meaning there is no limit. Isn't it? That's what we call big. There is no end. There is no limit. That's why Brahman comes from the root word Bra, which means big, which means it is infinite. So here Brahman has been defined as Akshara Brahma Yoga. Next answer he gives now about Adi Atma. What is Adi Atma? Svabhava Adi Atman Ucchate. This Adi Atman Ucchate is called Svabhava. Meaning what? The all-pervading consciousness is known as Brahma. Right? That's what he told us. All-pervading consciousness is Brahma. This same all-pervading consciousness, when it is in the body, it is called Adi Atma. So that is the difference between Brahman and Adi Atma. Now, one very important point that we have to understand, that Brahman is all pervading, Adi Atma is in the body. So the word Atma here, in the word Adi Atma, Atma here does not mean soul, okay? Here the word, when he says Adi Atma, the word Atma means what? Body. So this very consciousness which is all pervading, when it is in the body, it is called Adi Atma. And very important to understand that consciousness is therefore the macrocosmos, cosmism. When we talk about Brahman, we talk about macro level. When we talk about Atma, it is at the micro level. Now, the word Svabhava is very important. Here, Svabhava does not mean that Atma is of the nature of Brahman. Because many people translate the word Svabhava as nature. But here, it does not mean that Atma is the nature of Brahman. That means we think that Brahman is something and Atma is something else. But he says, when he uses the word Svabhava, it means that this Atma is the very Brahman itself. It is not of the nature of Brahman. It is the very Brahman itself. Why? Because if Brahman is all-pervading, it is outside the body, it is inside the body also. So it is not different from Brahman. It is the very Brahman itself. Now therefore, why do you give it two names? Why do you complicate our lives and give two names? Why do you give it two names? Why do you call one Brahman? If it's the same, the Atman also is the same. Why do you give it two names? From different standpoint. If you look at totality, we call it Brahman. If you look at individuality, we call it Adi Atma. So therefore, just like when a person in relation to his wife is called a husband. In relation to his children is called a father. The person is one and the same, but we give two different names to indicate the relationship. So when we think of God as totality, it is Brahman. When we think of God as the individual within us, we call it as Atman. Now comes the next answer to karma. What is the definition of karma? So definition of karma is given in the third line. Bhuta bhava udbhava kara visarga. Something to be understood here. So now, if this Adi Atma, that means we are talking about Atma now as the body. This body is here, it is existing, and within this Atma is the very essence of Brahman. The next question we want to ask is, how did this body come about? Where did this body come about, isn't it? Since we have mentioned that Adi Atma is a body, and within this body is the very essence of Brahman inside, how did this body come out? So he's saying that all the actions that we do, all the actions, and the actions are of bhuta. The word bhuta means everything in creation, whether it is insects, birds, plants, trees, humans, bhuta covers everything in existence. Bhava, the birth of everything in this creation. Udbhava means the growth. Okay, so two important things. What does karma do? It is responsible for the birth and the growth, and visarga is the offering. Now I'll explain this. Okay. Now, all kinds of actions that we do, whether we do yajna, we do danam, we do tapa, austerities, whatever we do, all these actions contribute to our next birth. So karma is all types of actions that contribute to our next birth. Whatever actions that we do, it brings about our very existence. What type of body, what type of environment, what type of place you are born in, everything is determined by the very actions. So the birth of everything in creation, the what we call the existence of everything in creation, the very seed cause is the karma. So, visarga, the word visarga here means our contribution to the actions. Whatever we contribute, what type of actions we do, right? And karma samhita means that is the definition of karma. So, what is karma? Karma is nothing but all the varieties of actions that we do that will determine the birth, our next birth. Now, so therefore Krishna has answered these questions, and in verse 4, he now answers the other questions now. Now here in verse 3, he talked about the, what we call the imperishable. Brahman is imperishable, Adi Atma is imperishable, even karma is imperishable. Why is karma imperishable? Karma also, not our individual actions can come to an end, but the totality of actions can never come to an end. The whole world is nothing but a cycle of actions. Action, reaction, action, reaction. It has been going on for generations and generations and generations. So all that which is described in verse 3 refers to the imperishable. Now Krishna is going to talk about the perishable elements, which are gross and which are perishable. So first thing he defines is Adi Bhutam. What is Adi Bhutam? He says Adi Bhutam Kshara Bhava. Now first we looked at the word Akshara, which means imperishable. So the opposite of akshara is chara. Chara means what? Perishable. So what is Adi Bhutam? Adi Bhutam is perishable bhava. Anything that takes birth, anything that goes out of existence, that is called Adi Bhutam. Now therefore, how do you define what is Adi Bhutam? That has the five elements, which means this body, this mind, this intellect, everything almost in creation is called Adi Bhutam. Therefore, everything that we experience in creation, including our own body, is perishable. And therefore, what does he say? To recognize God as Adi Bhutam in the perishable, we also understand that in our body, in all these five elements, if you recall in chapter 7, what did he say is the Aparaprakriti, the lower nature of God, is made of what? Five elements: mind, intellect, ego. So all this is collectively known as Adi Bhutam. So we must understand the presence of God also in these elements. and we thus we call God as Adi Bhutam also. Then what is Adi Devam? Adi Devam, he says, is Purusha. Now what does Purusha here mean? Purusha here means the very what we call the body is known as Purusha. So Adi Devam is the various devas that reside in this body. For example, for eye there is one deva, for ear there is one deva, for skin there is a deva, for every organ in your body there is one presiding deity. So God also exists in this body as Adi Deva, as the presiding deity for everything, every organ, every sense in your body has got one deva which is presiding also. So therefore Adi Deva is Purusha. And the final, the other answer is Adi Yajna Ham Eva. Now Krishna is saying, Ham Aham Eva, I am verily the Adi Yajna. And Yajna we said is what? All the sacrifices that we do. Now therefore, who is the receiver of your sacrifices? He is saying, I am that Adi Yajna. Where am I? Atra Dehe Deha Britam Vara. Atra Dehe, I am that Adi Yajna that resides in your own body. In all of us, God is residing in us as one element called the Adi Yajna. Meaning what? Every prayer, every mantra you're chanting, everything that you're offering actually is being offered to who? The receiver is the Adi Yajna in your body. So God is there residing in you, listening to all your prayers. And what he told us in chapter 7, whatever you pray with faith and you follow the rules and regulations, I will grant you that wish. So I, meaning God as the Adi Yajna in your body, and the receiver of all your prayers. Everything that you pray for, all the rituals that you do, I am the receiver. Where am I? I am within there in your body. So Adi Yajna is the receiver in your body. In fact, we can look at chapter 18 verse 61 also. A similar idea is given there. Chapter 18 verse 61, which is page 330. It's a very famous verse also in the Gita. Chapter 18 verse 61, page 330. O Arjuna, the Lord dwells in the heart of all beings. The Lord is there in the heart of all beings. Here he is telling us in chapter 8 is that I am dwelling in you as the Adi Yajna. So, he is the witness and he is the receiver of all our prayers. Now, come to verse number 5. Now he is answering the important question of what happens at the time of death now, to remember him at the time of death. So now we must understand two things. That here we are talking about the main central theme of these 6 chapters is Upasana. Upasana means remembrance of God, or prayers, rituals where we do, where we remember God. That is called Upasana. As I said, Upasana comes from two words. Upa Asana. Asana is sit, Upa is near, meaning to bring your mind nearer to God. Now, this prayers or whatever we do, rituals, prayers, etc., we chant mantras, the purpose is to bring the mind closer to God. We must understand that most important thing in your prayers is your motive. The motive is a very important part of your prayers. So because of this, we can be divided into two categories of devotees, which we discuss in chapter 7. Now, when we worship a God with form, that is called Saguna Ishvara, right? So Saguna Ishvara Upasanam. Upasanam, when we worship a God with form, can be for Sakama. That means your motive is what? For all kinds of material benefits. When you worship God for all kinds of material benefits, either to gain something in this life or the next life, what happens? That is one type of worship that is called Sakama. Okay? The other type of worship is called what? You also worship a god with form, Saguna Ishvara Upasana, but instead of Sakama, it is Nishkama. Where you do not worship for material benefit, but for what? Spiritual benefit. You do not worship for material, but spiritual. You are not interested in artham, you are not interested in karma, you are only interested in moksha. Now, this type of worship, now we know what Sakama worship can take us to, right? It is limited. It keeps us coming back and back for repeated births, okay? Now, let us look at now the Nishkama worship. In Nishkama worship, you can go in two different directions. Even though your motive is for moksha, but when you worship for moksha, even though you don't ask for material benefits, this type of worship can lead you to two different directions. Okay? What are the two different directions? You have two choices. Okay? One, you practice Nishkama Karma. Nishkama Upasana. What is Nishkama Upasana? Worship for moksha. Okay? So, you carry on, you practice Nishkama Upasana. So, every time you go to temple now, what do you ask for God? If you are not supposed to ask for material benefits, what do you ask for God? Moksha is very far away, still. What do you ask for? Oh Lord, may I get purity of mind? Oh Lord, may I get the right guru? Oh Lord, may I get the right scriptures also to guide me? And may you remove all the obstacles that will lead me to knowledge. Right? So you are asking for that. You are asking. You have not attained knowledge. You are on the path, but you have not attained this knowledge. Now, what happens? Then, once you go through this type of worship, asking for all these barriers to knowledge to be removed, once these barriers are all removed and you attain the right guru, you attain the scriptures, you attain the right knowledge to understand what? That Aham Brahma Asmi, Aham Atma Asmi. Now then what happens? Then the scriptures say, option is you can drop the worship of Saguna Ishvara. Why? Because you've come to Nirguna Ishvara. So you started with Saguna Ishvara worship, then you gain the knowledge to understand that God in totality is Nirguna Ishvara. What do? You drop Saguna Ishvara worship. It is an option, not necessary you have to drop. Then what happens? Then you gain Jivan Mukti. So now you have attained the state of Jivan Mukti. Means while you are living, you are totally free from the shackles of life. Now what happens now at the time of death? The scriptures say that is called Sadyo Mukti. S-A-D-Y-O. So from Jivan Mukti, while you are living, you are free and you have attained this knowledge, Aham Brahma Asmi. At time of death, you will attain Sadyo Mukti. What is Sadyo Mukti? Direct liberation. You don't have to go to any loka. You will go direct and merge with Brahman. That's why it's called Sadyo Mukti, direct liberation. So therefore, you worship God in form, pray for moksha, come to knowledge, attain the knowledge, become a Jivan Mukta, at time of death you attain Sadyo Mukti. Okay. Now, what about the second direction? Second direction is a person who prays to God also, Saguna Ishvara. He asks for moksha also, but in this life, he cannot get the knowledge. He does not attain the knowledge. Aham Brahma Asmi, Aham Atma Asmi. Although he has been praying that I want moksha, I want knowledge, I want guru, but in this life, he cannot come to that. Now, what happens to this person at time of death? What happens now? Where does he go now? Huh? Which loka? Okay, he attains Brahma loka, that's correct. What happens in Brahma loka? Brahman will give him the knowledge. So, the knowledge will be given to him by Lord Brahma. This is not Brahman, this is Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma with the four heads. Why four heads? four Vedas, that represents the four Vedas. So in Brahma Loka, he will get the knowledge, Aham Brahma Asmi, Aham Atma Asmi. And then when he attains the knowledge, he will then get moksha. That type of moksha is called Krama Mukti, K-R-A-M-A, Krama Mukti, which means indirect liberation. The first was what? Sadyo Mukti, meaning direct liberation. You don't go through any lokas. This is called Krama Mukti, which is indirect liberation, where upon death you go to Brahma Loka and then finally attain liberation. So in chapter 8, Krishna is going to speak about Krama Mukti, indirect liberation. For one who doesn't have knowledge, let's say you have devotion to God, you pray to God, you want moksha, but you cannot attain this knowledge, you can still attain mukti also. And then in chapter 9, he will take up the Sadyo Mukti, which is the direct liberation that comes with knowledge. So you have two choices. What is the two choices? Either you come to Gita class here, or you take Gita class in Brahma Loka. That is your choice. Either or, you still have to come to what? Knowledge. So you cannot avoid it. Okay? So that's your choice. I'm just advertising my classes. Okay. So now, this is what he's saying now. In the fifth verse, he's dealing with Arjuna's question about remembering God at time of death. Okay? Prayana Kale Ishvara Smarana. And what he says, Yaha, such a devotee, Prayati, he departs. Now, here he's talking about a Nishkama Bhakta, who is only praying for moksha. Okay? So such a kind of devotee, a Nishkama Bhakta, for whole life he's been praying for moksha, when he departs, Kalevaram, at the point of abandoning this body, Muktva, giving up, he has already given up identification, he leaves this body and he travels. Okay? He travels, he says now, he travels. Now why is it we don't see the fellow travelling? Here he says, he departs from the body. So how come you don't see the fellow departing from the body? Because what's departing? Sukshma. Sukshma is what? Subtle. How can you see anything subtle? Right? So you cannot see it. So it departs. It is subtle. It is sukshma. Here he's talking about sukshma sharira, karanam sharira departing. So obviously you can't see. So what happens? Antakale, at the time of death, Mam Eva Smaran, he only remembers me. His mind is totally fixed on me. He only remembers me. And thus, what happens? Mad Bhavam Yati. Mad Bhavam means my state. He attains. So he gets mukti. And that mukti we discuss as it is two types. So depending, one is Sadyo Mukti and one is Krama Mukti. So we have to understand that, that's what we said just now, that if you worship for moksha but you don't attain knowledge, you will get indirect liberation. If you worship for moksha but you get knowledge in this life, you get direct liberation. So Krishna says such a devotee departs. Now, in verse number 6, so therefore, at the time of death, now he has explained to you the significance of remembering God at time of death. What is the advantage? You will attain mukti. So how important it is to remember God at time of death. But the question is it so easy to remember God at time of death? That is what he is going to explain now. So in verse number 6, he wants to explain further about this time of death. Now, you know the famous saying is that watch your thoughts, they become your words. Watch your thoughts, they become your words. Watch your words, they become your actions. Watch your actions, they become your habit. Watch your habits, they become your character. And watch your character, because that becomes your destiny. So this is exactly what chapter 8 is all about. That everything starts from here, the thoughts. It's not just simply just remembering God at time of death like that. So now Krishna says here in verse number 6.
ஏஜப்பி அப்படியும் வரும். ஓகே, வெர்ஸ் நம்பர் சிக்ஸ். லுக் அட் த செகண்ட் லைன், கலேவரம் அந்தே, அட் த எண்ட், அந்தே மீன்ஸ் அட் த எண்ட், தியஜதி கிவிங் அப் வாட் கலேவரம் த பாடி. அட் த டைம் ஆஃப் டெத் த பர்சன் கிவ்ஸ் அப் த பிசிக்கல் பாடி அண்ட் வாட் ஹேப்பன்ஸ், யம் யம் மீனிங் வாட் எவர் பாவன் ஸ்மரன், ஸ்மரன் மீன்ஸ் வாட் எவர் த பர்சன் ரிமெம்பர்ஸ், ஸ்மரன் remembering whatever you remember at the time of death, so critical it is to understand this, that he says tam tam eti, that very thing you will attain. Whatever your last thought at time of death, that is the next birth that you are going to attain. So important it is therefore to understand our last thoughts at the time of death. You would certainly attain the birth in accordance to what your thoughts are. Now of course there is some very good opportunity for us here, isn't it? Because what did Krishna say? At time of death, whatever you think will determine your next birth. Which means what? I only have to think about God at time of death, isn't it? Isn't that what he's telling us there? Because he says, whatever you do is not important. At the time of death, you think of me, you won't come to me. You think of something else, you'll go in that direction. Which means what? Until death, I can do anything I want, I can think of anything I want, but at the time of death, I make sure I think of God. Right? That's why you all hear the stories why people name their sons as Shiva and Ganesha and all these and Lakshmi and all that. But does it work that way? Right? So, when death is coming, just quickly remember Lord. And this is a loophole for us. And all of us are looking for what? Loopholes and shortcuts. Right? So, is it that simple? If our whole life we have been going through doing nothing but pursuing worldly pleasures and desires, and all of a sudden at time of death, can you just stop everything and think of God? Is it possible? It's not even possible, Lord. Yeah. When you're going to actually have death to show you that? Yeah, that is what he's saying, like sudden death comes, you know. Yeah, you never know when you're going to die.
You may not be conscious at the time.
Yes, correct. You might be in coma also, right? Sleeping also, true. So sleeping at a time you're thinking of ice cream and chocolate. Straight away you go there. So. Remember their mother, what was it? Their mother, okay. So now, let us try to understand a little bit of this, because Krishna qualifies this now. He says in verse number 6, very important word, Sada tat bhava bhavita. Tat of that bhava, of that thought, you will reach that bhavita, that destination. But what does he use the word sada? Meaning what? What you always think of. Not what you think of at time of death. But what you think of at time of death is what you are always thinking of. That means the type of lifestyle that you have been leading. That is going to determine your last thought. So if your mind is saturated with God throughout your life, automatically your last thought will be of God. If your mind has been saturated with worldly pleasures, definitely your last thought is going to be of all kinds of pleasures. So that's why he uses the word sada. Constantly fix your mind on me. And you can only constantly fix your mind in me, on God, if what is the type of lifestyle that you have been leading. So sada tat bhava bhavita. Now, so Krishna is saying now whatever the last thought which you think at the time of death will be your next destination. Now, however, we must also understand, so this tells us a very important thing. If we want to determine our next life, then it is very important what we do with this life. And the thoughts and desires of a person during the last moments of life often we cannot manipulate, isn't it? Because there is a tendency of the mind to run to the things that it values the most. And therefore, our habits, our day-to-day habits are very important, and we should cultivate this remembering of God continuously. So in verse number 7, now he adds a very important line, which I've told you all before, this very beautiful line, verse number 7, in the second line. Mam anusmara yudhyacha. Remember this. Mam anusmara yudhyacha. Krishna is giving us advice now. How to remember him at time of death? How to constantly, because he says what? Mam anusmara, remember me, but yudhyacha, do not stop your duties, do not give up your duties. While you are doing your day-to-day activities, keep me at the back of your mind. Keep me constantly in your mind. So it is a daily practice of remembering God throughout our daily life. To lead a righteous life. This is what he is telling us. If you want to remember me at time of death, it is not going to be automatic. It has got to be as you lead your daily life. Keep thinking about me. Keep practicing to think about me. So how? As we know that we have various options, various sadhanas we have. So in our bhajans that we sing, in the mantras that we chant, in the temples that we go to, whatever we do, the scriptures that we study, everything constantly keeps us reminding us of God also. So what he says now? Sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara. Sarveshu, all the time. Sorry, sarveshu, all kaleshu, the time, all the time. Mam anusmara, think about me. May you constantly practice to remember me daily. So, what Krishna is saying now? Not at time of death remember him, but what he is saying? Constantly practice to remember me daily. Remember me daily. So now, of course, next doubt will be, if I am supposed to remember God at all times, am I supposed to give up all my duties and just sit down whole day and chant Rama, Rama, Rama? No. So he adds in the word yudhyacha. And while you are remembering me, carry on doing your duties. Of course, here he is talking to Arjuna. He uses the word yudhya, which means fight. To all of us, means just carry on doing your duties. So he's not advocating a life of giving up everything, going to ashram and just sitting down whole day remembering God. He's saying, remember me, but do not neglect your duties and responsibilities. Now, next doubt of course we will have is, if I have to remember God all the time and yet I have to carry on performing all my duties, how is it possible? Is it really possible that I can keep thoughts of God in my mind while also thinking about all my duties and responsibilities? So here basically what we have to understand is that our mind has got a conscious and a subconscious level. At the back of the mind, it's the subconscious level is actively moving on. While your conscious mind is engaged in the current day-to-day duties, there is what is known as a subconscious mind. How do we cultivate the subconscious mind? You may experience this also. Sometimes when you are sleeping, you are thinking of God. There are mantras that are chanting in your mind. I'm sure many of you would have experienced this. It is not your mind, it is your subconscious mind that is working. And you will find that sometimes in the night when you get up, you find that you are hearing mantras also still going on. So this is all your subconscious mind. Why? How do we cultivate the subconscious mind? How do we bring this subconscious mind to be soaked in Ishvara Smarana? When we do daily habitual spiritual practices, this subconscious mind gets soaked in Ishvara. So it is our waking stage when we do all these activities, where we engross ourselves in thoughts of God, the subconscious mind gets filled with thoughts of God. And therefore it does not become an effort for us to think of God. While we are going about, that subconscious mind behind always have thoughts of God going on. Now, a very simple example I have always given is that when you are taking a train journey, let's say from Kuala Lumpur to Butterworth, you have bought a ticket to get down at Butterworth. But along the way, the train stops at many, many stations. And what you do at the station, you may get down to buy a cup of coffee or you buy a magazine or a newspaper. But while you're on the platform doing your transaction, what is at the back of your mind?
Train.
What is your destination at the back of your mind? I have to go to Butterworth. It does not mean you get down in Ipoh, you sit down and spend your whole life in Ipoh. You know at the back of your mind, when you hear the train whistle blow, immediately you run back to the train. So while you're doing your day-to-day transactions, subconsciously you're aware of the destination of your life, subconsciously you're aware of the train. Similarly, another example I've always given, a mother has a young child and the first day the child is going to nursery school. So the mother drives the child to nursery school, drops the child there and the mother drives back. While the mother is doing all the household chores, what is at the back of the mind of the mother? The child. She carries on doing her work, but at the back of the mind she keeps on thinking about what is the child doing in school. She never loses thought of the child. Why? Because your mind will always think what it values the most. So in your life, if you value God the most, if you value moksha the most, if you value that goal the most, that is what in the back of your mind always will be there buzzing. You don't have to force yourself to think about God. You will carry on your duties and think about God. And thus, at the time of death, to think of God is not going to be a big effort. It is going to be very natural. So that's why he says, Mam Anusmara Yudhyacha. And he gives us also the examples how to cultivate these thoughts of God in the subconscious mind. He says, "My in the if you look at the third line, my arpita mano buddhir. Arpita, dedicate what? How do I cultivate these thoughts of God in my subconscious mind? Arpita, my dedicate to me what? Manaha, your mind." And buddhi, your intellect. Use your mind and intellect dedicated to me, meaning what? You have two equipments to dedicate to me. So your mind must be soaked in devotion to Lord through all your devotional practices, the various bhajans, chanting, etc., whatever we do. And your intellect also must be devoted to God through our study of the scriptures. So both your mind and intellect, which is the equipment you use to lead your life, all your thoughts, all your desires originate from your mind and intellect. May you dedicate it to God. So constantly engage your mind and intellect in all kinds of sadhana on a daily basis. And definitely when that becomes it becomes your subconscious mind which will guide all your actions. So when you hold God as the primary goal of life, then all your actions will follow that also. And thus Krishna gives us the promise, if you dedicate your mind and intellect to me, you carry on doing your work, you will definitely think of me. And when you think of me, Krishna says, Mam Eshasi Eva. Eva, you will certainly, Eshasi, you will attain me. You will come to me. You will surely attain me. And he adds in a guarantee for you somehow. Asamshayam, there is no doubt. This is the only way to attain God. If you dedicate your mind and intellect to God on a daily basis, you will definitely come to Him. Okay? So we will stop here and we'll come back next week and resume on verse number 8. And with the prayer, Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kansa Chanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishna Vande Jagat Guru.